chick flicks, romantic comedies, rom-coms. You love them, you hate them.
But we are here to eviscerate them. Welcome to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast.
We are your hosts, Eliza Bertrand
and Janelle Walker. Now, let's get on with some feminist joy killing.
Every Christmas season, I am reminded of my favorite, you know, reassuring Christmas phrase, and that is, yes, Virginia, there is American imperialism in the South Pacific. Welcome back to Rom-Com Killjoys.
Oh, Janelle, it's a classic Christmas this week.
You got beaches, you've got undetonated bombs, everything a kid could want.
Absolutely.
We're in for it, Eliza. We're in for it this week. We're in trouble.
Ooh, how very right we were.
Yeah, hi. It's Janelle, the ghost of Christmas present. This episode is a hot fucking mess. Because of my terrible Wi-Fi and various other technical issues, we recorded about 90 minutes of audio that have here been reduced down to the only passable audio, about 30 minutes. It's a wreck. But, you know, that's kind of like 2020. It's kind of like Operation Christmas Drop. It all comes together. We hope it makes you laugh. We hope it makes you even cry. We hope it makes you think. Enjoy this hot mess. We love you. We'll be back next week. Enjoy your chiptune tech the halls. Merry Christmas!
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is our very special guest this week. I am so excited. We have this week Rachel S. Cohen, who is a journalist, writer for Air Force Magazine, and one of my very dearest friends. Rachel, say hi to everyone.
Hello, everyone. I am super stoked to be here on episode whatever number we're on. but hopefully I will bring at least a small amount of insight to this beautiful, beautiful masterpiece of the movie.
Yeah, we thought this movie really needed an expert to talk about it because, you know, it really gets into the weeds of politics and military practices.
Yes, I think if there's one thing we can say about Operation Christmas Drop, it's that it is a gritty, realistic portrayal of the American Air Force. Wouldn't you say, Rachel?
Yeah, you know, it really gets at the heart of what it means to be deployed, you know? Not a whole lot of food, especially if you go to Christmas parties. You know, you live in terrible apartments that you only fill with Christmas cheer and geckos. You know, I'm sure our service members in the Middle East really have a lot to empathize with in this film.
Oh, I hope our service members in the Middle East are not watching this movie.
Guys, it's not worth it. You can spend your time in better ways.
If you can access Netflix, you have better things to watch, I promise.
For the 5 minutes a day that your internet works, don't use it to watch this movie.
Well, I think on that note, Janelle, do you want to tell us a little bit about Operation Christmas Drop?
Oh boy, do I. As with every Netflix Christmas rom-com, the summary from Google is terrible, but here it is. Congressional aide Erica, played by Cat Graham, forgoes family Christmas to travel at her boss's behest. At a beachside Air Force base, she clashes with Captain Andrew Jantz, played by Alexander Ludwig, who knows her assignment is finding reasons to defund the facility. Well, ladies, that's what Google says Operation Christmas Drop is about. But, what would you say if you had to really articulate it? What is Operation Christmas Drop really about?
You know, it's hard to say because the movie's a little all over the place. I think the movie is saying that in the year 2020, when digital life reigns supreme, even black women can have a white savior complex.
I think it's really at the core of a heartwarming tale about the love between a woman and the congressional appropriations process. Truly, you know, everybody can find fulfilling, meaningful love in BRAC.
And Rachel, what is BRAC? Can you tell us?
BRAC is Base Realignment and Closure. It is a process that Congress can initiate when it wants to save money on you know, bases which are, you know, brick and mortar bases are obviously one of the heaviest expenses for the military and the people that work at them. So there's only been a few BRAC rounds in at least recent history. I think the last one was in 2005. So basically, they say, hey, let's start an independent commission to look at all of the stuff that we may not need anymore. And then, you know, members of Congress say, but obviously not in my district. My district is important, which this congresswoman in this film, you know, says, we have three bases that we can close, and one of them is in my area. Don't want to do that. So let's go kill Anderson in Guam. Anderson is a real Air Force base, as the movie very astutely points out. It is a hub for American air power in the Pacific. It's where a lot of bomber aircraft are based, a lot of airlift planes. They do a lot of patrols out of there just because the Pacific is so big. But, you know, I can understand why someone somewhere would have the idea that a great film premise is, you know, going through this awful process that gets a lot of people angry and just, you know, having it be mad at the fun people in the Pacific.
Well, and I would imagine with my limited understanding of how the government works that the way that BRAC is enacted is a single congressperson decides that they don't like a specific Air Force base and then they alone can just close it without any approval from anyone else, right? As almost happens in this movie?
That is not how it goes. There's a commission and it makes its recommendations and then, you know,
and then they close everything on Christmas Day.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. In the moments leading up to Christmas Eve, you know, Santa himself comes down and says, no more for you. But no, I mean, it is not the head. I don't really know what this woman is supposed to be. I don't know if she's like the head of the House Armed Services Committee or something real like that. But it is not up to a single human being to kill off bases.
You know, I get the feeling that the writers of this movie didn't do like a lot of research.
Yeah, I feel like there's two big things I want to talk about. One, we will return to, which is that this congresswoman who apparently oversees Guam didn't know that the citizens of Guam are American citizens, but we'll return to that. The second thing we really need to talk about is that Operation Christmas Drop is a real humanitarian exercise that the troops stationed at Anderson Air Base have been doing since, I believe, 1952. Is that right, Rachel?
This is true. I recently received a real press release about the real Operation Christmas Drop, and I figured I would not grace your presence by reading it on air. But yeah, I mean, you know, it is one of those things that certainly does good in the area. You know, one of the things that the movie doesn't mention is that things like this do give... It's basically built-in training time for pilots. Right, you know, it's training time. You can practice packing things. You can practice, you know, loading them onto the aircraft themselves. You can practice flying around. There are certainly a lot of merits, but you know, in the end, it also gives them good PR. Right, so you know, two birds, one stone kind of thing.
Well, and I feel like the movie like does a good job of explaining what Operation Christmas Drop is and why it's good, both for like the locals on the islands and why it's good as a training exercise thing. Like, that's the one thing I think it actually managed to accomplish pretty decently. But what it doesn't really accomplish is explaining why it would require a congressional staffer to, like, go to Guam to investigate when she could probably just get the numbers on her computer, or why it would require her to stay for a week and participate in the military training exercise.
You know, honestly, if I were that staffer and somebody said, hey, Rachel, go spend a week in paradise for Christmas, I would be stoked. I mean, it also might have something to do with the fact that, you know, I'm Jewish, so I don't really have to be that many places for Christmas, but, you know, I would just lean into it.
Well, and she does. She leans into the tree of a man that she meets.
That is
true. The main guy is so tall. So, yes, yeah, so we've got these two... this romantic couple who are poised to hate each other for mostly unclear reasons. We've lost Janelle again. Fuck. Fuckity, fuck, fuck.
I haven't actually worn a flight suit myself, but my reporter friends that have worn flight suits say that it actually does make everybody look good, and I think that that is not an exception for this very tall tree.
Yeah, he does look very good in his flight suit. I love at the end, though, when she gets a flight suit with, like, patches on it, and I'm a little confused. I'm like, is she suddenly in the military? But they won't give her a Santa hat.
Like, she's allowed to wear military uniform, but not the SAT.
You know, they're short staffed. They'll take anybody who's willing to volunteer.
I'm literally sitting next to the Wi-Fi box, and it still kicks me out.
No. Oh, no.
Do we want to try this again? Janelle?
I'm just so scared that if we commit to it, the internet's going to know.
You kind of cut out at the end there. So what we heard was, I'm just so scared that if we commit to it, then the internet's gonna go.
Did that not work?
No.
You just like completely disappeared.
Fuck.
That came through nice and clear.
You know, I will say, this movie started out promising. Right? Like, as somebody who has lived in D.C. for, you know, many years now, I always get very excited when it's like, oh, this is Georgetown, and it's the holidays, and this is going to be uplifting, and then, you know, here's the Capitol that, like, is filmed in rooms. It's clearly not the Capitol, and it's fine.
Oh, absolutely. There were, like, all these promising moments where you can understand why the pitch for this movie got picked up. But, like, the script was just so terrible. Like, there was this one moment when he's showing her around the island and she's saying, you know, this doesn't feel like Christmas because it's so hot and she's kind of iffy on Christmas anyway ever since her mom died and yada, yada, yada. And he has a line that basically says, like, well, you know, you can make new traditions and they can be weird, but if they're important to you and they become your traditions, they're just as valuable. And I was like, see, that's actually a really great message to come out of a movie like this, right?
Especially this year. Right? I mean, holiday traditions are totally
important. Right, like everyone's having to make their new traditions, and then this movie is placed in a very non-traditional setting for a Christmas movie, at least from an American perspective. And so I was like, oh, if that's like the lesson she's going to learn at the end, like that you can make your own traditions, even if they're weird, but like it's about, you know, giving into it and everything, great. But then they kind of just drop that. Like he says that not even halfway through the movie, or maybe like just about halfway through the movie. And then like, I guess she figures that out, but that's not like what the movie's trying to push. The movie's trying to push that like she should care about Christmas and also people who live in the Pacific.
Like, well, and what's weird about Sorry, I have a thought. What's weird about that is that what they could have done was that they could have said, like, oh, yeah, Operation Christmas Drop is something that the Air Force has been doing for 70 years as, like, this gesture of goodwill and as this, like, you know, I mean, it's more complicated than that, obviously, but let's put it that way for this Netflix rom-com. Sure. And that's a Christmas tradition for us here on the base. Like, they could have made that connection, but instead they wanted to, like, push through this weird plot where for some reason the U.S. government doesn't want the military to look like the good guys.
And there's also all these other things in the way that aren't in the way. Like, they find out there's going to be, like, a tropical storm, so they're not going to be able to do Operation Christmas Drop until, like, a week later because they have to wait till the storm has passed. And, like, okay, so then they do it a week later. Like, what's the big deal? And they're like, no, if we don't do it in the next 2 days, we can't do it.
Which would have made more sense if they had said, like, oh, no, we've been doing this for 70 years. This is a tradition. It's a Christmas tradition. Christmas traditions are important. And then Erica could have been like, yeah, I care about Christmas traditions. And there could have been a whole poignant moment where they looked at each other and they felt things. No, instead it has to just be this, like, vapid bullshit for whatever reason. I don't understand.
Also, like, can we talk about the, and this is really saying something, the most cringeworthy moment of the entire movie, which is when he flies her to one of the small islands. They never name any island. They don't even say Guam, I think, until like the end of the movie. They're always just like, the island. But they go to one of the small islands and they meet the local children. And she's suddenly overcome by the spirit of sadness that they're poor so much that she gives them everything out of her purse. And then her purse. And I wanted to crawl under the couch and die. No, that was just me.
I was just saying, I thought Janelle was going to talk.
I thought Rachel was going to say something.
We're so good at this. I don't know. My only thought during that whole scene was, like, how excited those kids must have been to be cast. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the most exciting thing that fucking happened on Guam for a long time. I don't know. I didn't think that was more cringeworthy than, like, the local market, which I'm sure is, like, a lovely real thing, but just the way that it was used, I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. It was a prop.
Yeah, I mean, it, like, to me, it crossed on the list of things that you know like some public affairs officer somewhere was like, oh, but you have to include like this tidbit to like show how great we are. It really felt like it cheapened the experience of mm-hmm. you know, what Operation Christmas Drop could be.
There was definitely an implication that every single person they interacted with was a Christian. Too, like, obviously, like, we're talking about Christmas and we're talking about Operation Christmas Drop, but the implication was that, like, every single person anywhere on this island is as excited about Christmas time as this, like, blonde middle America airman, you know, right? Like, they were all like, and then we have these, you know, Christmas colored snow cones and we all sing Deck the Halls, and like, there was never an implication that this is an important tradition, but they don't actually give a fuck about Christmas.
I mean, the other thing that struck me along kind of those lines is it, I mean, having never been to Guam, I can't specifically speak to this, but there are a lot of people in countries that we have bases in, or, you know, areas of the world that we have bases in, you know, whether they are U.S. territories or not, that are, like, not super stoked that we're there.
Interesting.
So, you know, it's, I am glad that their hearts were warmed enough to forget that they still, like, have planes.
Well, I think there was also a weird thing going on in this movie that made me super uncomfortable related to that, which is that the film constantly positions people of Guam as apart from the U.S. military in this way that actually doesn't reflect the fact that Guam is a U.S. territory, and that, again, like, the citizens of Guam are American citizens. Like, there's this, like, the congresswoman at one point said, like, her part of her chastising of the base is, I don't understand how Operation Christmas Drop helps Americans, but the people of Guam and those surrounding islands are Americans, and the film doesn't correct her on that.
Well, look, I mean, that gets at, you know, a big problem for, you know, continental U.S. and, you know, territories, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because clearly they are U.S. citizens. I mean, you know, look at Puerto Rico and mm-hmm. you know, hurricane aid, but there is no sense on the mainland, you know, in terms of constituencies that we owe anything to people that live outside of that. I mean, we barely, mm-hmm. you know, people in the U.S., you know, it takes a lot to get us to really buck up and give help to other people that are in different states than us, right? So,
right.
You know, everything is so localized, and so you hit the Pacific Ocean, and that really, I think that really comes into play there.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of nuances that, of course, aren't going to make it into something like this. I mean, I don't know much about Guam, but I know with Puerto Rico, you know, like, when I've been to Puerto Rico, and when you see some tourist ask, like, the woman working at a stall, do you accept U.S. dollars? The, like, look of just pure disdain on the face of the, you know, person working at the shop, and they're like, yeah, we're an American island, is, you know, it's so painful. But at the same time, there's also a lot of Puerto Ricans who still don't necessarily want statehood or still want to be understood as separate from, you know, the continental U.S. And so I'm sure on Guam, too, there's that kind of, you know, complexities, and that's not going to make it into a movie. But some acknowledgement of it would be nice, or at least not, like, completely just, you know, happy face painting over everyone, so that it's just one, like, big happy island where we do this one Christmas thing and that's all that matters. And it felt so stereotyped and so, like, we are the good Americans coming and saving these poor natives in a way that was very painful to watch.
Obviously, there is also the benefit to the military of doing this in that, you know, it does foster, you know, closer relationships with the local community.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's, I think the movie may have portrayed a little more of, you know, savior complex than it might feel like in real life, hoping that the, you know, there is sort of the community spirit that is portrayed there.
Mm-hmm.
I was very happy to learn at the end that I think his name is Bruce, you know, the guy who's been doing the drop for like 40 years, is actually a real person.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so one of the things, like, starting out, I guess in the first half of the movie, maybe, you know, I think it tried to make an effort at the, you know, people that hate each other that, you know, like, come to love each other in the end kind of thing. But mm-hmm. it was never really clear to me that they were arguing for any specific purpose. Right. You know, it was sort of like the, you know, we're going to, you know, have the, like, sort of witty, like, flirty banter just to have it, but not without, like, you need the teeth in it to really, like, matter as a plot point of, like, people not liking each other.
Oh, so. For sure this movie did not have teeth, and neither did their relationship. I mean, there was one point, again, kind of like after quite a bit of their interactions where she was like, you know, I just thought you were this like stuck up guy who only cared about yourself. And I was like, wait, when did she think that? Like, I didn't even ever see an interaction that implied either that she thought that or that he did something that would make one think that. Like, they just wrote in things they thought a couple in this kind of movie should say and didn't give them any actual basis for saying those things, you know. And she's like all annoyed with him, but for no reason. And, you know, and they have that so tired trope of the like busy businesswoman who cares so much about her work that she doesn't understand real emotion. And then the laid back guy who's going to teach her how to enjoy life. And like, first of all, yeah, they like painted him as this laid back guy, except that he runs an entire international multi-island yearly military operation. And according to everyone in the movie, runs it really efficiently. So I never bought him as the, like, chill island bro. And she seems to be very bad at her job, which means that she's just bad at work and bad at being a human.
I think it would have been a better rom-com if it had been the relationship between her and trying to get her promotion. Which I guess at the heart of it.
I do love when it's implied that now that the position that she wants is available and she could be up for the promotion, she can't put her name in for it because she's in Guam doing her job. Like, they say something about someone else in the office and they're like, oh, you know, whatever, Laura's gonna put her name in for it first. And you're like, you're literally on a Zoom call with someone sitting in your office right now. What is stopping you from talking to your boss about wanting this promotion? I feel like it was so focused on, like, being a modern story where they all, like, get on Zoom and stuff, but also doesn't know how anything works.
I mean, it was nice to see a realistic portrayal of, you know, Zoom in these times.
Janelle, do you have things to say?
I do, but I'm scared. I was actually going to ask.
Do it. I believe.
I was going to ask if at any point in this we had brought up the meet cute for this particular couple. The meet cute, so called in this case, only for its form and not for its quality, our hardworking career gal, as you have elucidated very well, meets our laid back military officer. Lots of questions about that. After he has been surfing at a beach. And someone drops her off at this beach for logical reasons? No. But to see our military captain shirtless coming in from a nice little surf. But as he does so, he walks past some undetonated bombs on the beach. And she asks him about this. And he says, oh no, that's just how we keep the locals away from the best beaches. And that's one of those moments that in these rom-coms, I see that. And I just think, someone needs to have their sensitivity chip reprogrammed because, oh my God, is that incredibly dark? And then the movie like never refers to it again.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, this movie had a lot of words.
It sure did.
Things were said in this movie. I'm not sure anything that was said in this movie had any effect on anything else that happened.
Yeah, like I think my favorite bit of dialogue was when they literally in his Jeep.
What happened to the Jeep,
Janelle? No. Janelle, we heard they literally in his Jeep and then it just bleeped out.
We just have to release the unedited version of this episode. Janelle.
This is the biggest hot mess we've ever had trying to record.
I will say, you know, as somebody from Washington who has traveled to military bases, I have never been met at my destination by a man in a swimsuit fresh out of the water, which is, like, mildly disappointing. But
yeah, I'd say that's super disappointing.
But I guess I do empathize with this riveting tale of, you know, a woman from Washington who just goes to a military base in search of information. But I will say, I do think that I am more successful at finding information at military bases than she is.
Yeah, she could definitely learn a thing or two so, from you.
You know, never found my own pilot, but, you know, I guess that's...
You'll have to ask your husband, who is also a journalist, if he's ever been met by a sexy shirtless airman upon arrival.
I don't think I want to know that. First of all, I would be curious why he was being met by an airman at all, why I was not on this trip. If he gets met by a hot anybody on a beach when he goes on a work trip, you know. Remember work trips? I will say, like...
Remember work?
No, the only two work trips that I did go on this year before everything shut down... both to places with beaches. So I think that this really, you know, gives me unreasonable expectations of what happens when I visit places that are stationed on the beach.
Yeah, you're in a surprisingly good position to judge the unrealisticness of this movie. I did want to just point out, because I'm sure that you were also amused by this, part of the impetus for the plot of this movie is that the main guy appears in like a brief newspaper, you know, bit about Operation Christmas Drop, which is what draws the attention of the congresswoman. And they keep referring to this photo of him in the Christmas hat, and they keep saying, oh yeah, I recognize you from your photo in the newspaper. And they never say what newspaper.
No, there was a shout out to Stars and Stripes. Very excited.
No, but he says there was an article about him in Stars and Stripes that was like about the actual operation. And she says, no, that's not what I know you from. I know you from your picture in the paper.
It was probably like one of those random like base like circulation, you know, just like kind of pages. It's like, you know, this week at Anderson or something like that like the congressional office would have gotten just as like they're on their list or something.
Okay, I'll take that explanation, because otherwise I kept being like, just, like, say the Washington Post or something. Like, give something. Me anything.
I don't know. I also think that I just wrote more plots in this movie than actually was
intended. Like, desperately trying to make it make sense in your head.
Yeah. One thing I did appreciate, Squadron Commander, I believe she is female, and so I do applaud the movie for attempting to show gender diversity in the military.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, what did you guys think of, like, the interaction between people, like, on the, like, the people who were packing the boxes, like, kind of, you know, his friends in the unit, like, and the relationships between them, because I was, like, sort of bothered at first.
No, I caught up with that, too. That really bothered me, especially given the amount of violence against women in the military in general, and Vanessa Guillen's murder not too long ago. I just kept thinking, like, okay, this is a rom-com and I get it, but also this, we know in real life that this sort of behavior leads to violence and very bad things. Mm-hmm. And I wish that the film had allowed Sunshine to push back on how much Joker was sort of harassing her. So it was pretty disappointing to me that sort of just went along uncommented upon, and then they ended up getting together.
Sunshine just wants to hang out with.
Yeah. First of all, I thought that, for one thing, when she responded to being hit on by a man by saying, I would rather hang out with my Camaro, I was like, oh, she's a lesbian. And so I'm very disappointed that we did not go in that direction.
Yeah. So the actress, I looked her up. I was thinking that she gets up there and she plays fiddle and she sings quite well in the movie. And I looked her up thinking maybe she was like, you know, a country singer who they'd gotten to be in this. But she's just like an actress who's been in a bunch of CW shows and stuff, who also apparently has an amazing voice and is a kick-ass fiddle player.
I don't know. What did you guys think of the final scene with coconut snow? Which actually, you know, is a pretty innovative way to do snow.
Yeah, I thought the coconut snow was cute. For the six people in the world who, like myself, are obsessed with the show Studio 60, it immediately made me think of the Christmas episode of Studio 60, where they also use coconut to make snow. But you know, I thought that, like, the fundraising event they had was really nice. It was, like, well-decorated, but in a way that you could believe that, like, volunteers put it together. You know, it didn't seem Hollywood professional, but it did seem creative and, like, people had done hard work. Like, again, I think the depictions of Operation Christmas Drop itself were the strongest thing in this movie. The depictions of the community coming together and volunteering their time and their, you know, stuff in order to put together this thing, I thought was nice. It just could have dealt without the actual romance plot on top of it.
Could have dealt without, you know, the, you know, showing up and being like, oh, you know, they're hot now. It's okay. Like, they can be in love now.
Right. Also, I want to know how this woman packs for a business trip, because knowing she was going to a military base in Guam, she packed like 2 pairs of 6-inch stilettos and pencil skirts, which she wore in the first 2 days, but she very smartly packed a series of progressively more casual outfits because she knew that she was going to slowly integrate into the society and fall in love and would need looser clothing as the week went on.
I mean, Eliza, think about it this way. If you were being sent on a work trip for the week of Christmas, wouldn't you know that waiting for you during that business trip the week of Christmas would be the love of your life? Probably a scruffy innkeeper in a small Vermont town. I mean, that would be my expectation.
Clearly, my method of packing literally everything I own every time I go on vacation is accurate, because you never know when you're going to need both cargo pants and a tight, flirty red dress.
No, I think, you know, following the progression of her shoes is one of the most, you know, engaging things.
Real character development there.
What did you think of?
This is actually a question for Rachel, because I know that we are not a podcast that is about like, oh, I'm going to dunk on your movie for not being realistic. We're not cinema sins over here or anything, right? But I feel like my hunch is that a legislative aide going abroad would not necessarily be like on the plane during a run, right? That doesn't seem realistic. Or do congressional people go up in the planes with military folks sometimes? Is that a thing that happens on occasion?
Yeah. You know, when they're out visiting and they want to see the sights and see. No, I thought that was totally feasible. I mean, the flight suit, not feasible. But, going up and watching how it works, you know, the actual level of involvement of, you know, the congressional aid helping push things out of a plane, probably less likely. But, no, I thought that was totally feasible. On the scale of things that are feasible in this movie, that did not bring any.
Speaking of that, have we talked about the gecko yet?
We have not.
Can we?
Ladies and gentlemen, because we are advising you not to watch this movie, you will probably never see this gecko, but believe us when we say it is the worst animated animal I've seen in a movie in like 2 decades.
That's harsh on the gecko.
It's a very cute animated gecko.
My favorite part was how the gecko, like, clearly it was attempting to have a plot purpose, but then just completely didn't end up mattering in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, like, did it bring her luck? Unclear. But that was the whole thing about the whole movie, right? Like, when I say there were a lot of words in this movie, I really do feel like they had all these, like, lines that just filled up space, right? Like, he was like, sometimes there might be geckos in your in your apartment, and she was like, that's fine, I can deal with anything. And then a second later she was like, oh, there's a gecko. Okay, but you just had a conversation about this. And then he was like, well, geckos bring you luck. And then they never go back to it ever again. And then, like, at the very end of the movie, you know, he's been having all of these like very bad connected like Zoom calls with his family, who he clearly loves and misses, and she pulls this big romantic gesture of getting them to come visit him in Guam. And so they're walking up to the house where they're going to celebrate Christmas, and she's like, your family's inside. And instead of being really excited and like running into the house to go see his niece, he stands on the street and talks to her for like another 15 minutes. Because all things like that were just, nothing would have changed if they hadn't said the sentence they said.
Yeah. Family at the end was a nice touch, but like I feel like it didn't sink in fast enough for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you said, oh, your family is like however many yards away, I would be like, are they? You know, I would have been like turning around, you know, like every which way, being like, are they in a tree? You know, are they? But he was just like, oh, okay. And she was like, no, they're in the house. And he was like, oh, okay. Family.
Well, and it was so clear that, like, they either couldn't afford or couldn't figure out because of COVID how to, like, actually get the family to Guam where they were filming to film him with the family, because they never show them. And I was like, it's like a nice plot point, but it's so clear. Like, you can immediately see what's happening from the outside, like from the production, because they don't show him with the family.
I don't know if it's a COVID thing. It strikes me more as a casting additional. Well, I guess they'd already cast the family members there, but I don't know. I feel like,
well, I don't know. Maybe they did cast them later, you know, because if they're just on Zoom the whole time, they could have filmed that an entirely different time. But yeah, it felt like movie problems rather than like an actual decision because of the director or something.
Yeah, I feel like this script feels like most, you know, Christmas rom-com scripts where it's like, well, we have like six different screenplays for several different concepts. So why don't we just find a way to just scrabble this together and put a nice, you know, military propaganda spin on it, and there you go, Netflix, there's your movie. Like, for my favorite example of this being that at the climax of the movie, when the supposed Christmas miracle has come and the typhoon is no longer a typhoon, Erica walks into the bar where our steady Midwestern farm boy airman is looking sad in his drink. And she just walks in quoting that line from Casablanca of all the gin joints and all the towns and all the world, which isn't a reference to any conversation they've had or even the drink he's drinking, which certainly doesn't have gin in it. She just says it because we all know what it means because it's shorthand for being clever, I guess.
Yeah, that was this whole movie. It was just shorthand and no clever. I feel like on that note, if anyone has any final thoughts they would like to share about this absolute 2020 dumpster fire of a Christmas movie, now is the time.
I think my thought on it is that if you want to make a rom-com about this really, frankly, very interesting thing that happens, this Operation Christmas Drop, I mean, it is sort of fascinating. It has an amazing, like, post-World War II history. It gets you into all of these issues that we talked about with Guam and U.S. territories and politics and all of that stuff is super fascinating. But if you want to make that movie, maybe try and write a romance to be a part of it, rather than just standing two people next to each other and saying, now kiss. That's probably what I would suggest.
An excellent suggestion.
Also, I did appreciate the bountiful collection of tropical-themed Christmas music. Mm. In this movie, like, you know, there were, I don't think I've ever heard any of the songs. So I'm glad that somebody got moved.
And it was a fun reminder to me that many people in the world celebrate Christmas in the middle of summer, in the dead heat of the summer solstice. And that is so interesting to me, and I forget about it all the time. Like, how interesting. What up, Australia? Mm-hmm. How's it going?
Anyone listening from Australia, tell us about your Christmas. All right, I feel like that's as good a place as any to transition.
Yeah, to take this recording our session out back and shoot it in the head.
Janelle, do you want me to thank the patrons?
Yes!
Before we close out our oh-so-lovely discussion of Operation Christmas Drop, we want to take a moment to thank all of our patrons on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/romcomkilljoys to become one of them. We especially want to thank our romantic leads. That's Ian, Trey, Esther, and Bob. Thank you guys so much for helping us to keep making this podcast and hopefully keep entertaining you. And as always, please follow us on all of our social media and keep listening to the episodes and participating in the discussions. We'd love to hear from you. Well, Rachel, you suggested we do this movie. So technically, this is all your fault.
I'm deeply, bitterly sorry.
So do you have any antidotes for us this week for things we should do instead of watching this movie?
We'll add, you know, if people are looking for more military-themed Christmas cheer.
Oh, yes, please.
NORAD, which is the organization that, you know, tracks incoming missiles that are trying to hit the U.S. and all of that good stuff. They also do a Santa tracker every year. So, you know, you can Google that and have that put you in.
Yes, the NORAD Christmas tracker, the NORAD Santa tracker is such a good recommendation in response to this movie. Thank you, Rachel.
Anytime.
Janelle, do you have any suggestions for us?
I do. I do have an antidote, not for my Wi-Fi problems, but for this film. So this film had my head spinning about the Pacific and the U.S.'s military involvement in the Pacific. And that made me think about one of my favorite romantic films that I think is a great antidote for this movie. And it's called Hiroshima Mon Amour, the 1959 French New Wave classic Hiroshima Mon Amour, which is a gorgeous, visually stunning, extremely sexy movie about a French woman and a Japanese man who used to be in love but aren't anymore, meeting in a bar in Hiroshima and talking about all of their past lovers and also about the bombing of Hiroshima.
Love that. So I, you know, when I'm watching one of these shitty Christmas rom-coms, what I want is for them to entertain me for an hour and a half and to put me in the Christmas spirit. And this movie did not do either of those things. So I'm going to recommend a couple of things that put me in the Christmas spirit every year. One of them I actually am recommending because I ended up mentioning it earlier in the episode, and that's the Studio 60 Christmas episode, which is called The Christmas Show. For those of you who don't know, Studio 60 is an Aaron Sorkin show. It's basically The West Wing, if The West Wing took place backstage of SNL, and it only ran for one season. And I think it's wonderful, and like eight other people watched it, and that's why it only ran for one season. But it does have an absolutely beautiful Christmas episode in sort of classic Sorkin style that will make you cry and will make you laugh and has some really lovely music in it and has coconut snow. So that's always a good watch. I also, if you're looking for some new Christmas music to listen to, well, not necessarily new, but new to you, one of my favorite Christmas albums that I listen to every year is We Three Kings by The Roches. That's R-O-C-H-E-S. It's three sisters who have the most beautiful haunting vocals and harmonies that you'll hear, and they have an absolutely wonderful Christmas album. So go check out The Roches' Christmas album if you want some slightly different but still traditional Christmas music to listen to. And finally, as Janelle referenced at the beginning of the episode, the letter, Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus, which was written by a newspaper editor in response to a letter from a five-year-old girl, is an absolutely wonderful read. You can find it online. Just look up Yes, Virginia. And it only takes a few minutes, but it's really beautiful and really does capture the magic of the Christmas season, if that's what you're looking for and what you absolutely did not get from this movie. All right, well, I think that's our show. Sorry to make you all suffer through this with us, but thanks for those of you who did.
Thank you for listening to the Rom-Com Killjoys podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to support us further, you can become a patron at patreon.com/romcomkilljoys.
Our theme song is Lady Slut Hitchhike Love by the band A Giant Dog, and the song you're listening to now is a cover of Baby Love by Colin Langaness.
Remember, Killjoys, don't let anyone kill your joy.
Not a rom-com. Not us.
Not anyone.
See you next time. Instead of breaking up, it starts and kissing at me.